to another edition of Feral and Fabulous. We have a most fabulous guest here today. I cannot wait. I've been waiting for a while to have him on. We have John McNair, the owner of McNair Custom Homes, and welcome to the podcast. Super, super excited to have you here. And I'm going to put you on the hot seat right off the bat because I know you're looking at me like, oh my gosh, what is she going to do to me? But there is a hot topic that I wanted to ask you about, and I know you may or may not be happy that I'm asking you about this, but I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. I hear people talk a lot about price per foot, and I know you are kind of the king of custom luxury home building, and I want to get your take on how you feel about talking price per foot in that space and what your thoughts are on it, because I hear people drop those numbers and talk about it a lot, but what does that really mean?
Well, you know, Cam, that's a very controversial and sometimes misunderstood equation, if you will. You know, first of all, the answer is it depends on what the price per square foot is. Right. And the number one thing I would say is, you know, real estate professionals and appraisers use that as a determination of value of like properties.
Right.
And first of all, you need to make sure what living area or what square footage is. And that's typically living area, heating and cooled area of the homes.
Okay.
So that's exclusive of patios, garages, entries, porches, things of that nature. So,
but those can still add value, right?
Well, they not only add value, they add cost.
Right.
And therefore, they add to the price per square foot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as long as you're comparing like properties, it's not necessarily a bad thing to do.
Okay.
But if you're shopping, it depends on where your home site might be, for example. What is the topography? If there's a large slab involved, is there, what are the CCRs, the covenants and restrictions? What are the setbacks?
Right.
Does it require sewer or septic? All those things add to the cost of the home, which therefore adds to the price per square foot.
Right.
And while we shy away from discussing it, what I tell most people is, do your homework.
Right.
Okay, first of all, do your homework.
Okay.
If you're going to build a luxury custom home, then seek out the builder, check him out, talk to him, talk to his clients, talk to his suppliers, vendors, even bank.
Yeah.
Maybe look at the Better Business Bureau.
Yeah.
If you have access, maybe you can look at legal records and see if there's any legal actions pending.
Right.
And just see how you click with that person, because this is a long-term relationship.
Right.
And it's not I oftentimes say price per square foot is like comparing, it's not like buying a Ford F-150 pickup truck.
Right.
I mean, if you buy a King Ranch four-wheel drive pickup, you can go to Blue Bonnet or Red McCombs and compare like products made by Ford.
Right.
Even though they're sold by different people.
Right.
Okay, but home building's not that way.
No.
I mean, what's behind the walls? What are the allowances? What is the reputation of the builder? What's the customer service like?
Right.
How long will he be there?
Right.
All those add value, which cannot be determined in the cost per square foot.
I know.
So it's a difficult thing.
Right. Right. And to your point, I feel like a lot of times, especially in the custom luxury space, I've seen a lot of builders that do a lot of what I call the jewelry. They have a lot of bells and whistles, but if you really look behind the walls, it's not a very well-built home. And so to your point on, I feel like there needs to be just more due diligence done on what's behind the walls that you don't really see, that you may not appreciate, but it still goes into the cost of building the home.
Well, there's nothing free. Okay, there's no secrets.
Right.
Okay, if you're talking to luxury custom home builders that build 6 to 10 homes a year, say, we buy our material pretty much at the same places. We all hire pretty much the same quality of contractors. It just depends on how you put your numbers together. What are your allowances? What are your features? What is behind the walls?
Right.
So all those things add cost and value.
Right.
And, you know, it's like driving a Cadillac versus a Kia.
Right.
Both give you transportation.
Right.
But one's substantially higher than the other because one's got nicer quality and features than the other.
Exactly.
So it's not all about price per foot. It's about the relationship with the builder.
Right.
And what how you feel.
Right. So you basically feel like you can use it as a tool as long as you're comparing apples to apples.
And that's very difficult to do because there's no standard.
I know.
You know, and that's, you know, if everybody's building by a checklist, that makes it easy.
Exactly. Exactly. And then it's really not that custom if everybody's building by a checklist. Right. So, yeah.
And the buyer, can you never know what they want. I mean, you can use fine Italian marble or you can use tile.
Yeah.
I mean.
Right. Exactly.
So it just depends.
Right. No. Totally.
Find somebody you like that is going to build in the budget that you have in mind.
Yeah. No, totally agree. So I'm going to shift topics and I'd love to talk a little bit about kind of your, where you started out, because I'm pretty sure you're a Brownsville guy, that you came from Brownsville. Tell me a little bit about kind of your start and kind of how you got into custom building.
How much time do you have?
Well, as long as you need.
No, I'll give you the Cliff's Notes.
No, but I think people would like to know kind of what your
background. Well, I grew up in Brownsville and went to Texas A&M University. After that, I worked a few jobs and ended up in Houston.
Okay.
I always worked construction during summers in college.
Okay.
And a buddy of mine started working for a company called General Homes. He called me and he said, hey, they're hiring people and they want somebody with college degrees and no experience so they can train them their way.
Okay.
So I went to work for General Homes in 1978. Great experience. As a superintendent, they moved me to Mobile, Alabama. I started a project there as a construction manager. That was in 1979. I had the five models all going. Hurricane Frederick came up Mobile Bay.
I remember Frederick.
Tore everything down.
Oh, wow.
So I had no job there. So they moved me to Slidell, Louisiana, that's a bedroom community of New Orleans.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Slidell. Yeah.
And so I ran that project there for a couple of years.
Okay.
And then I ended up leaving and was recruited by a company called Jim Craft Homes.
Oh, yeah. I remember Jim Craft in San Antonio. Yeah. Right.
And they wanted me to open their Dallas division.
Okay.
So I moved to Dallas and opened the Dallas division. And that went well. And then life happens.
Yes.
And I moved to Austin.
Okay.
And a couple of buddies of mine from the past at General Homes came and recruited me and said, hey, we're going to go to Georgia and start a home building company, and we need somebody to run construction for us.
Oh, I did not know that piece of the equation. I did not realize that that's what took you to Atlanta.
Yeah, that's what got me there. So basically, we put all our money in, and that was in 1985.
Okay.
And if you know what happened in the late 80s.
I do. Okay, I'm very familiar. I was in real estate.
The S&L crisis and things of that nature. So anyway, we went up there and failed, essentially. We did our deal and got caught economically.
Yes.
And
as did many.
And we did. And so they left. They came back to Texas, my two partners. And I stayed there, cleaned everything up, and started my own company in 1988.
Okay.
And that's when I started. It wasn't totally custom, but it was production with a custom.
Like semi-custom?
Flair. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what I would do is say, hey, everything you see in my model home is standard, which was opposite of what a lot of people did.
Which I know. And that's one of the things I've always loved about your approach, because I feel like even back in the day, you did that. And I feel like nobody else was really doing that, where they say, what you see is what you get. It's kind of like, what you see would be nice to have, but it's not what you're going to get.
Well, and we know that clients are going to put all that stuff in their home anyway. So why not include it? It's easier for us as a builder. We don't have a bunch of change orders.
Right.
And it's more cost effective for the client because it's already included in the pricing.
And I think it helps with their expectation of what they think they're going to get. Because so many times I feel like people go into a model and they think, oh, this is what I'm going to get. And that's not what they get.
Correct. And then, so anyway, long story short, I met my wife there, had my family there. In 98, I decided with my wife's permission to move my company, not move it, but start a company in San Antonio.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yeah. And my brother was here, so he helped me with my dumb tax as far as subs, vendors, developers, things of that nature. And so we started in 1998, McNair Custom Homes.
Okay, cool.
And we ran that deal simultaneously. till 2010. I was both in Atlanta and San Antonio.
Right.
And then, you know what happened in 2008.
I do. So, I'm very well aware.
So
yeah.
Another one of those bumps in the industry.
Yes. Yeah.
But we closed down Atlanta.
Okay.
Slowly got it all closed up and concentrated strictly on San Antonio.
Cool.
And then about 2012 or so, I decided, you know, that scared me, 2008.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be the 7,500 units a year builder. So we decided, hey, we're going to go pure custom.
Yeah.
And that's when we started, about 2012.
Okay.
So about 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And just started pure custom.
Right.
And it's worked out quite well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to that point, I would love for you to talk a little bit about kind of what do you think separates McNair Custom Homes from the other custom home builders?
I think one of the things is my background.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We put customer service first.
Right.
Okay. I've always been that way. We were always taught that way.
Right.
And secondly, because I was in the high production, I learned how to be, how to budget well and how to have economies of scale.
Yes.
And so that's what we do. We communicate well with our clients, and I think we deliver big value for the buck.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I can say from firsthand experience, I've always been so impressed by the level of customer service that you offer, not only at the time of the build, but way beyond that. It's like you develop a relationship with the clients, and it doesn't stop just after the closing. It continues on. And you've had many, many people, I believe, that over the years have built multiple times with you.
That's correct. And, you know, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, these clients are spending probably the largest purchase they'll ever do.
Right.
And we want them to feel like, from our perspective, they're our only client.
Absolutely.
And so the personal attention is imperative in our program. And just because I say I'm a value builder, it doesn't mean we skimp on anything.
Right.
I mean, you're still getting the high-end quality finishes. You're still getting the individual architecture. I mean, whether you use our in-house person or we use three or four architects on the outside.
Sure.
And some buyer may have their own architect. Bring them in. We're happy to work with anybody.
Right.
And we customize it to what that individual client wants.
Cool. No, I love it. No, that's awesome. And along those same lines, I would love for you, I'm super excited to know that there is going to be a Parade of Homes out in Pecan Springs in 2027. So next year. So tell me a little bit about that, because I believe you're definitely participating. So what's going on with that?
Well, it's a pretty exciting thing. Pecan Springs is just the other side of Anaqua Springs off of Bernie Stage Road.
Yeah.
Actually, it's Teuton Beauregard at that point. And
I always wanted to know how to say Teuton Beauregard. I see that sign all the time. And when you just said it now, I'm like, oh, that's how you say it. Okay, good.
I think he was some kind of general in the Civil War.
I think he was. Yes. I think Dave actually told me that. But yeah. I wasn't sure how to pronounce it. So.
Well, and Pecan Springs has been kind of nobody knew where it was.
A well-kept secret.
Call it that.
Yeah.
And it's Acreage Home Sites. It's probably the number one Acreage home site in the San Antonio area.
Agreed.
I mean, I would say that and Cordillera Ranch. And Cordillera Ranch, they're apples and oranges. If you want to live in Cordillera Ranch, that's great. It's a different lifestyle.
Yes.
But Pecan's great. The Parade of Homes is going to be in May of 2027. I think there's 10 to 12 builders in it. So that's going to be a very, very large parade.
I know. I'm super excited about that.
And it's going to be fun. As fun as parades can be.
Yes, I know.
It's a lot of work for the builder. But,
I know.
But then we get to showcase the community
and our
product.
What you can do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm super excited about that.
So they're going to be, and it's going to be a high-end deal.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about, like, what do you anticipate the price ranges being?
You know, I anticipate the prices starting in the low $3 million.
Which is unbelievable. Okay. I'm so excited about this. I'm super excited.
It's kind of weird that we talk numbers like that now.
I know.
But that's what it is.
I know.
You know, the homes will probably be starting around 4,000 feet
for
probably 3.25 to 3.5. And there's talk of some people going 8,000 and 10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
And much as $4 to $5 million. So it'll be interesting. The builders kind of keep everything close to their vest on what they're doing.
Of course.
So we don't know exactly what the other guys are doing. But in general, I think we're going to be kind of in the middle of the pack.
Okay.
You know, our plan is to come in about 5,200 square feet at about $3.5 million, maybe.
Okay.
Something like that.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. I'm so
excited.
I know.
It's going to be a neat deal. There's lots out there outstanding.
I know.
I mean,
they're beautiful.
No bad topography.
Right.
I mean, it's, and Taylor Dreis, who's the developer, has done an outstanding job.
Agreed.
Saving trees.
Agreed.
Serpentine streets.
Absolutely.
Things of that nature.
It's such a beautiful community. And I feel like once people see these parade of homes, I feel like because it has been such a well-kept secret, I feel like the secret on Pecan Springs will be out. And I feel like people will absolutely be, oh my gosh, how did I not know about that?
Well, it's almost out now. I mean, Taylor has, he has no lot inventory. He opens up a section of 10
so
or 15
lots. So a lot of people
lots,
already, are
and
aware.
And they're gone. And I mean, and there's probably 30 people living out there now.
Yeah.
It's a 10 or 15 year deal.
Right.
But it's.
Left, right? 10 to 15 more years left in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's gorgeous. People need to spend the time.
Yeah. No, totally agree. And so in addition to Pecan Springs, let me know a little bit more about what other places that you're building. And I know you'll kind of build anywhere depending. So tell me a little bit about that.
We've been in the Dominion for 20 years.
Absolutely.
And we recently developed 26 lots on the north end of the Dominion. And that's our garden home or villa type product.
Yes.
And we will be there for another 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
That product starts at about $1.6 million and goes up to about $2 million.
Okay.
There's not much left there.
Right.
But
right.
We're very fortunate to have some lots. We do off-site. I mean, like you said, we've built in Lavernia. We've built in Tapatio Springs.
I know.
We'll go wherever the client wants us to go within reason.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
Maybe 30, 45 minutes from the from the
area. Mothership.
From the mothership.
Okay.
Exactly.
Cool. No. That's really, really cool. And so what can you tell me over the years, since obviously things have evolved, what do you think the differences are now in custom home building versus when you first started? Like, what kind of morph have you seen over the years?
Well, the price has gotten out of hand. unfortunately, I mean, that's COVID created some situations which we will never recover from.
Right.
I mean, labor's gone up. Materials have kind of leveled off. I think the number one thing that I see on luxury custom home builders is availability of lots.
Is that right? Okay.
Some of the regulations involved with developing lots are becoming so hard to deal with that a lot of developers are saying, I don't really want to deal with building custom size lots.
Okay.
And I'd rather do production and sell
it. It's easier for them.
It's easier for them.
Yeah, I get that.
And get rid of it because on a custom deal, it's a slower boil.
Yeah.
Okay. Things
right.
take longer to get through.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's our number one looking out for is lots, is finding other places to build.
Right.
And
right.
It's harder and harder.
Right. Tell me a little bit about this. When you have somebody that wants to do a custom build, what are some of the things you feel like that they really need to be asking the builder about from the very beginning? And how does the role of the builder and selecting a lot play into that equation?
You know, the worst thing that can happen for us is somebody coming to us and say, I've already bought this lot and I want to build a house. And we go out there and sometimes shatter dreams because they think they've got this wonderful site.
Yes.
And from
you're a dream crusher sometimes.
Sometimes, and we don't want to be.
I mean,
we want this business. So I think first, if you're going to build a custom home, it's kind of like what came first, you know, builder or the lot.
Yeah.
Or the builder or the architect.
Right.
The builder's first.
Right.
Find your builder.
Right.
Find a guy you like. Find a guy you can get along with, because this is a long-term deal.
Right.
This is not a, you know, sell you the lot and see you later.
Right.
This is, I'm going to build for you.
Yes.
I'm going to hopefully.
You're going to get to know each other. You're going to be in. Yeah.
To help you realize your dreams.
Yeah.
And then after you move in, I'm still going to be there for a long time.
Right.
And we want to be there.
Right.
So they need to pick the builder first, and then they can ask the builder to help them evaluate lots,
right,
depending on what their preferences are, right, whether they're views or school or whatever, orientation,
right,
north, south, et cetera. So I think they need to get a professional involved so they don't make a mistake.
Right.
You know, once you buy your lot, you're kind of, you know, so I have people come to me with a lot and a plan.
I know.
And it's a square and a round hole sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and so, right.
So
right.
It's a difficult thing.
So if somebody wants to build a custom home, you actually would be in favor of them contacting you early on so you could help assist them in figuring out what their dream is and where to put that dream.
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun part too.
Yeah.
And whether we get the job or not, I mean, we're happy to help.
Right.
And then they can say, hey, we found some. That's fine. You found somebody else, that's fine. But we're happy to help. We'll help them also find architects.
Right.
That
align special, with align what they're, with, yeah. Yes, and with the align people, with what they want.
Well, and everybody's different. We have, yeah. We have two landscape contractors that we use.
Yes.
One's a little more different than the other. So we let people
tailor it to the client to figure out who's the best fit for
that.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I totally get that. I know that you've done building all in many different areas. Particularly, what I wanted to talk about is the Tri-Cities area. I know that you've built over there. There is Terrell Hills, Alma Heights, Almas Park. So tell me a little bit about the difference in building over there than, say, building out in the hill country in Pecan Springs. Because the soil, I would feel like, is very different.
Well, the soil's different for sure.
Yeah.
Chances are you're going to have expansive clay soils.
Right.
So you just need to know that your foundation could cost you $100,000 more.
Right. It could.
You
it
just need
should
to know
factor
that.
In. Right. Yes. Exactly.
And generally, in those areas, you're doing a teardown.
Right.
Okay. So you've got to factor in tearing down the existing home.
Exactly.
Removing the septic tank, whatever might happen. And then, right. And then comply with the various little communities' building codes.
Right. And that's something you can do, right?
But
if something needs to be torn down, they can.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, if they go with you on the build, then you can help them coordinate getting everything torn down and starting from scratch.
We'll do as much or as little as they want. I mean, if Perfect. They want to tear it down themselves, fine. But there is an art to tearing down. Okay.
Right. I've heard that.
You can leave footings down there. You can leave septic tanks. So, but you can tear it down. It's not overly expensive, you know, $20,000-$25,000 possibly to tear it down and haul something off. And then you do your geotech work on the soils and determine what you're dealing with.
Right.
So up front, the buyer knows. You don't.
Right.
They don't get surprised once the project already gets started.
Right. No. Totally get that.
And those
that.
Are great areas. The only downside is they're all teardowns for the most part, and there's not that many sites out there.
Right. No. Totally agree. So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is I know one of the exciting things is that your son, we've already had Jack on the podcast before, and I, like I said, I'm so excited that we have another generation coming up right behind you that will be kind of taking the helm at the, of the ship eventually and keeping on, which is one of our sayings at the podcast. So tell me a little bit about that. How fun is that for you to have Jack at the company and kind of like you're mentoring him, getting him ready for the next, the next iteration?
Yeah, it gives me a reason to go to work.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
He's got a master's in accounting. He worked for a big four company.
Yeah. You have to be so proud.
He did everything right. And I always told my kids that if you wanted to come work for me, go work somewhere else first.
Right.
And get real world experience. And when Jack called and said, hey, I'm interested, I was excited as I could be. And, you know, he didn't know a lot. He knew a lot, really, I guess.
From growing up in the bit. Absolutely. Right. You do learn through osmosis, I think,
a
little bit.
Yeah. But he did well. I mean, it's a thrill having him. He started at the bottom.
Yeah.
Took a substantial cut in pay to come.
Right.
But he was a little rough at the beginning, but after
as
about...
As working with family can be,
but,
trust
you know,
me.
My wife is jealous. She says, you get to see our son every day.
I know. So, I feel for Debbie because I can understand that and relate to that
for
sure.
Yeah, but it's a great deal. He understands the employee-employer relationship as opposed to the dad-son, although the dad-son plays all the time in there.
Of course.
But he's so smart.
Yes.
And it won't be that long. Now, I'll always be there. Yeah. I told him, you can take over once you carry me out in a box. Okay? But he's slowly getting more and more responsibility.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel more comfortable leaving town on trips,
yes,
which is comforting to have somebody there.
That's got to be.
So I'm as happy as I could be.
That's awesome. Actually. No, I love it. So kind of jumping off from that point, I wanted to talk about, what do you like to do in your fun time? Like what do you guys, you and Debbie like to do anything fun?
Well, we do. I mean, I love working.
Yeah,
okay, I do.
I know.
I mean,
I know. And I can genuinely agree with that because I've known you for 20 something years and you do love working.
I mean, so working is not bad.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But to answer your question, when I met Debbie, it was in Georgia.
Yeah.
She had a lake house she bought from her family. So we go spend time at the lake house on Lake Lanier, which is north of Atlanta.
Right.
And we try to spend 6 to 8 weeks a year up there.
Okay.
I grew up in Brownsville, as you said.
Yeah.
So Padre Island, South Padre.
We've got
a place on South Padre.
I know. I've been to that place, and it's so cool. I love it.
Yeah. So we go there and fish. So I like to fish. And
Do you like to deep sea fish as much as Debbie?
Debbie's more the deep sea fisherman.
Yeah, I love deep sea fishing.
I mean, I love it, except I don't like the boat ride necessarily.
Okay, I understand.
I mean, in South Texas, it's a 3-hour boat ride.
It's a bit,
And, you know, if we go to Cabo, it's a 30-minute boat ride.
True.
I like that.
True.
But I go inshore.
Okay.
And so I get the redfish and the trout. And
but you like to fish.
I like to fish, and I like to dove hunt, and quail.
Yeah.
And I have a dog that helps me, so it's fun.
And you like to also hunt for hogs, don't you? I mean, don't y'all have some kind of like little expedition? I've heard little, inklings about that.
Yeah, we called it a predator control hunt. we actually hire a helicopter.
I know, I've heard.
And we fly. We have a ranch in Uvalde along with other ranches.
Sure.
They all combine together and let us fly their properties, and we shoot hogs out of the helicopter.
Cool. Cool.
They are so damaging. You're feral and fabulous. These are feral hogs.
exactly.
And they really have no redeeming qualities whatsoever, other than they breed twice a year with 8 or 12 per litter.
I get it.
They tear up your fences. They tear up your ground.
I know.
They eat the fawns. They're bad for cattle.
They're a problem.
They're a problem.
Yeah, I agree.
And we don't even put a dent in it.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Some people may not like that.
No, I think that's cool. I've heard about some of those expeditions, and I heard they were pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're flying at 100 feet off the ground.
That's kind of crazy.
Semi-automatic rifles.
Oh, my gosh.
Chasing hogs.
I may have to go on one of these hog hunts. I'm kind of thinking I might be game.
It's a lot of fun.
Annie, get your gun.
There you go.
Cool. Well, you have been a delight to have on the podcast. And we are now going to start the next part of our podcast, which is the Feral or Fabulous. So if you would pick up your paddle and you're ready at the helm. The first one I'm going to ask you is going on a cruise. Hey, oh my gosh. Same. Feral. Yes. And not a good way.
A river cruise I could do.
Okay.
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 A river cruise is a floating hotel.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
But being out in the middle of the ocean.
I don't even think I could do a river cruise, but I still appreciate what you're saying. I think if somebody told me I had to do a cruise, I probably would be more likely to maybe consider a river cruise, but I just don't like the whole idea of a cruise. There's just way too many germs and way too many people, and it just freaks me out. So.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. We're very simpatico on that. Okay. So, skydiving. Oh, really? Okay.
I've never done it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I mean, obviously, you had no idea what I was going to ask you. But.
No, I've never done it. My oldest son, Graham, and I were going to do it for his 21st birthday. We were all set up to do it in Padre Island. We all went down there. We went to the airport, and the weather wasn't good.
Oh, so it was just a timing thing.
And so we didn't do it, and I've never...
Just haven't
done it again.
Okay.
But I want to.
But you, okay, so you're still, you're brave. Okay, I'm scared. I just don't think I could do it, you know? Yeah. I mean, my husband used to do it for a living, but I mean, he used to jump out of the planes and I've seen videos and I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah,
you
know? Probably be feral for him.
Yes, yes. No, he's jumped out so many times. He's like, I'm done with that. You know, sure. After a knee replacement, I think he's seen his last jump. So, okay. Ice wine. Have you ever had ice wine before?
No, that was a tough one.
Okay. Well, the next time you go out to dinner.
I'll go like this.
Okay, yeah. I love ice wine. Ice wine is a dessert wine. And I don't know if you and Debbie ever go to Chamagalcha, but they have the best ice wine at Chamagalcha. It's so good. I can't remember the Matt. I'm gonna ask my trusty producer if you know. Is it Enniskillen or something like that? Oh, yes. Did I get it right? Okay, so you know what? Now I know a gift for you. So definitely, because I know well your birthday's not coming up until July, but definitely I think I'm gonna have to get you some ice wine because you like wine. I mean, sure. You like regular wine, so sure. I think you might like ice wine. Okay. So I thought maybe you'd had it before, but
no.
You know,
okay. I'm sure Jack would tell you all about
it. Exactly. But yes, maybe you and Jack would both appreciate some ice wine. So, okay. Horseshoes. Okay.
I love horseshoes.
Okay. So you've played.
Well,
I figured growing up.
I told you I was an Aggie.
Yes.
Okay. So
yes.
We played dominoes, you know, moon in 42. We played a lot of horseshoes.
Okay.
And nothing's better than playing horseshoes and drinking beer.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, no, I can get that. I especially love the drinking beer part. Yeah. So I love a little. What's your favorite beer?
I actually like the Mexican dip beers.
Me too. I love Bohemia.
I like Bohemia.
Yeah.
I drink a lot. I drink Modelo and
recently, Modelo Especial.
Primarily Pacific. I've been doing a lot of Pacifico.
Oh, I like that too. Yeah.
And that's. Yeah. I don't drink as much beer as I used to.
Me either, because it has a lot of histamine in it, but that's another story. Yeah. So anybody, but I do love me some beer. Yeah. So, okay. Cigars. Okay.
I'm not a cigar guy.
Okay. I didn't know, but I absolutely hate cigars. Like, they are disgusting. I'm so allergic and just, oh, they're nasty.
Well, I know a lot of friends that love them. And
I know.
They all say, hey, I'm going to.
That's why I asked, because I didn't know. I'd never seen you smoke a cigar before, but I didn't know if you liked them, you know, and maybe you just, I hadn't seen you.
You know, former smoker too, and don't.
No, no, thank you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Okay. The last one is saltwater taffy. Really? Okay, I misjudged you on that. I thought you were going to be game for that because I figured you grew up on the coast, you know, in Brownsville, and I feel like there's a lot of saltwater taffy along the coastline.
We grew up in Brownsville.
No, I know.
That's northern Mexico.
True.
So
true, but you've spent a fair amount of time in South Padre.
Oh, absolutely.
So I just feel like there's a lot of coastal cities that have a lot of saltwater taffy, and I thought maybe that would be something that you like, but no.
Not your cup of tea. I'm not a big sweet guy anyway.
Well, that's true. Sweets. I don't understand that, but because I just sweets are life, you know. I'm a sugar pusher.
I get it. My wife's the same way.
Okay, well, I'm very simpatico with her in many regards.
You know, if you'd have said ice cream, it would be this.
Oh no! Okay. And your son Jack, he's a midnight snacker, and he's been known to. He said this on the podcast that he likes to go into the kitchen and open up the freezer at like midnight and have a little ice cream snack. So I do think that runs. Yes, it can be, but obviously he still has his girlish figure, so it's all good with that. So, well, thank you so much for participating in the podcast and the Feral or Fabulous. And
well,
so
I enjoyed
we look forward to having you back.
Well, thanks so much. I had a good time.
Thank you guys so much for joining us, and keep on keeping on. We'll see you next time.